patreon.com/thewalkoffpodcast. $4 a month gets you in there.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
So every single week, we comb through all of our comments and questions from everyone who is being incredibly interactive. Sometimes it's a joy. Sometimes there are comments that rise our ire. But either way, we tackle them here on the Monday Morning Bag on a Tuesday afternoon. Hello and welcome to the walk-off, everybody. I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by the best co-host in the biz, Adam Mack. This is the mailbag. Now, before we get too into this, I do wish to just quickly give a little bit of a shout out to Jack from John Boy, Jolly Olive, who joined us yesterday morning. That episode is up currently wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube. And I do wish to just kind of mention here, when it comes to sports, obviously an episode gets old fast. But in this particular episode, you probably do have a few days to check it out, where it's just, we get into just more long-term views of what's going on with the Jays, what he feels going on with this team north of the border, which is always kind of cool to hear a guy's view from an out of market on what's going on with Toronto here. So that was really cool. And then on top of it, we also talk his team, of course, is the New York Mets. So we do bring up some Mets stuff and talk Chris Bassett, who he is very well aware of. Okay. For mailbag, whenever you want to reach out, you can do so by DMing us. That's on Instagram, the Walkoff Podcast, or on Twitter at Walkoff Podcast. You can also message us in Discord. If you don't have a link for the Discord, how you get that is you DM us again, Instagram or Twitter, and we'll send you a fresh link. And then you can set up your account and start chatting Jays 24/7, which is pretty much what that Discord is. And Patreon. Just a tip of the hat to everyone who is given that buck a week. We do truly appreciate it. And it bumps you up to priority number one when it comes to your questions and comments. So we do have some Patreon comments to get to today as well. And on that, let's get into it, Mr. Mack.
Let's get into it. We'll start with the Patreon stuff. By the way, I guess we should just rip this Band-Aid off, that starting next week, there will be less content on YouTube and more content on Patreon side of things. So
that is true. Now we are, Mailbag is going to be fully available. Our flagship Friday show is still going to be fully available. Long Toss, obviously, still fully available. But there is going to, our interviews are still going to be fully available. But you, by joining Patreon, are going to get access to a couple extra shows a week. On top of that, you're going to get priority access. So basically, as soon as we're done recording, we stick it up on Patreon and you don't need to wait for the editing, or if an interview, we've got a couple stockpiled, you don't need to wait for those.
Okay, so
Band-Aid off. The Band-Aid is off.
The Band-Aid is off. Yeah, we'll have a full rollout of that next week. It's good news. It's good news.
Yes, it is good.
It's especially if you're already in the Patreon, then you're just going to be thrilled. Mm-hmm. Anyways, first one comes from Wyatt. It says, hey, fellas, did Scott message that Yankees fan and tell him to suck it?
Wyatt, of course, referring to a comment on our YouTube video where we were breaking down the Yankees and Jays series that was upcoming. And he basically was like, oh, Jays fans, you're going to go in there, and even with our depleted lineup, you're just going to have nothing but excuses when we take 2 of 3. A few things about that comment rubbed me the wrong way, Adam. Number one, obviously, mentioning the depleted roster of the Yankees is already making excuses before the series even takes place, so that he can lean on that even if they do wind up losing, which they obviously did. Yankees fans love to come in sometimes. Like a flash in the night. Leave their comment. I did go back, and of course, they're long gone, right? They don't respond once you get back there, and they're wrong. But I love that Wyatt remembered that, and that Wyatt knows how spiteful I am.
Yes, absolutely. All right, next one from Patreon as well. From Matt says, hey, lads, first off, absolutely be taking that free beer from left field. My email is redacted. Nice. Second question for the mailbag, obviously not quite a big enough sample size yet, but Cody Bellinger looks like he's trending more towards his past self than he has in recent years. How this links to the Blue Jays is, do you think a change of scenery is best for Kevin Biggio? Surely he needs the confidence of a club to give him everyday at bats and allow him to get into a rhythm. So first of all, Cody Bellinger, one of my left-handed bat targets in the off season, hitting 300 right now.
Mm-hmm.
OPS 930. That's an OPS plus of 153. I mean,
and he's hit some dingers too, right? Where's he at for home run total?
Five home runs.
So right on pace with Matt Chapman, who leads the Toronto Blue Jays. So Bellinger has, or it's early, but I mean, yeah, change of scenery. First 3 weeks in Chicago definitely looks good in that Cubs uniform. And one thing that never gets cold is defense, something that Bellinger has in spades.
One thing worth noting before we do touch on Kevin Biggio is when Bellinger was available, he was getting regular at-bats.
Yes.
So I do think that the change of scenery may be a factor, but it wasn't like he was sitting on the bench. He was only playing part-time for the Dodgers. So just want to clarify that. As far as Kevin Biggio goes,
it's an interesting question. It is an interesting question for a few reasons. And obviously, this doesn't just apply to Kevin. I think it also applies to Santiago. And even to a little bit lesser extent, Whit Merrifield, right? Whenever you are a player that is used to getting everyday at-bats and everyday play, whenever you're kind of put into a platoon role or a bench role, it's tough. And yeah, Kevin has really had to deal with basically having almost no role, being that guy who can do everything, play everywhere. There's been very little consistency to even where he's been put in the field. Yes, he has the most reps at second base this season. However, we saw him in right field just yesterday. Springer had the day off. And guess what? Kevin hits that go-ahead home run, three-run dinger. Looked pretty good.
Look good.
So, would he be better off in given a new chance somewhere else? It is possible, especially if that place, and again, this goes for Santiago Espinal as well. If that place is somewhere where he can play every day, yeah, it might wind up working out for the guy.
I guess one thing to keep in mind with all this is just that, like, we do have a bit of a logjam at second base. If we do move on, well, we're going to have to move on from one of these guys. If Espinal is traded, if Biggio's traded or whatever, if they turn into something productive, we can't really be too butthurt about it. If
no, Espinal they have been given plenty of opportunities.
Yeah.
Like, yes. No, that's true. If Kevin winds up going to Houston or something and becoming a regular in that lineup, we can't pine over it. I mean, we gave Kevin many, many opportunities. So if he does wind up with a change of scenery and that's what it took.
I mean, people are going to point to Nate Pearson and be like, yeah, but look how much rope we gave Nate Pearson. And now he's finally, you know.
Yeah.
Ahead of myself, he still hasn't played yet this year, but kudos to Nate on the call up.
Yeah,
we'll get to that in a second. Up,
still has yet to play. Yeah.
All right, next one. Andrew McLeod says, thanks for the Jolly Olive interview, that was great. Scott, bad luck with Nate Pearson doesn't include mononucleosis. That didn't work with the girl I was dating. It shouldn't be an excuse for Pearson. I wish him great success in the bullpen. Blue Jays need it. Andrew, I'm sorry to hear that mono derailed your girlfriend's baseball career.
Yeah.
I still chalk mono up to bad luck.
That is so funny, though. I do like the point he's getting at. It's like, oh, this, all these herpes, such bad luck. Like,
all right, let's talk Nate Pearson, Scott. Adam Simber was sent to the IL. I keep wanting to say sent down to the IL. Rhomboid? What was the injury?
Rhomboid strain in the membrane.
Rhomboiditis for Adam Simber. You should try throwing overhand. Maybe that might
have
help.
Have you heard rhomboid before? I think this is the first time in my life that I've heard rhomboid. And since seeing the word yesterday, I now feel like it is a permanent fixture in my vocabulary. Rhomboid will not go away. The rhomboid strain.
Yeah, I hope to see it in your act soon. great word. I haven't heard rhomboid before. When I first heard it, I was thinking the flattened square, but that's a rhombus.
The rhombus.
A rhombus, yeah.
No, rhombus strain and rhomboid strain, very different.
Very different, yeah. I mean, anyways, we're completely derailed. This is great. Nate Pearson, expectations?
Is it wrong to be like, I don't really have expectations for Nate Pearson at this point? No, I'm excited he's up. He has looked incredible in AAA so far. And the fact that he kind of took himself from that seventh inning guy and put himself in the closing position in Buffalo so quickly was awesome to see. He has three saves. He pitched 8.1 innings, struck out 45% of the hitters he faced. And this is why he was the guy who was called up. Adam Simber needed to go to the IL. And when you just took a look at the guys in AAA, Nate had put himself on the first to be called up list. Like he just dominated from the point he took the ball in AAA. He looked good enough in spring training that he was the dude John Schneider and the organization decided to go to. Listen, there is so much upside on Nate Pearson. We don't need to dwell on that so much because we all know what he has for stuff. His fastball is elite, has been since he was touted as the number one prospect in baseball back in 2020. What I need to see from Nate Pearson, stay healthy and hit the strike zone. If you're doing that, I think the rest will look after itself. What do you, Adam, wish to see out of Nate Pearson?
Yeah, I mean, I'm
hitting
really
hitting his spots, man. For me, that's all I want. Just show you can hit the spots you're trying to hit. Because he does have a 15% walk rate.
Really trying to temper my expectations with Nate Pearson. On the one hand, I'm sure he will pitch for the Blue Jays this week. I don't know when. I'm sure there will be an opportunity. But Adam Simber won't be gone for long. Once he's back, is Nate Pearson the first guy getting sent down? Or is he pitch? Because that's kind of where I feel.
I get your question.
Is
this going to be a performance-based?
We all have questions with Anthony Bass. Trevor Richards at the start of the year, we sure did, although he's looked better since. If Nate Pearson pitches twice as like five strikeouts in two innings and two or three walks, he's getting sent down, right? Or is he stealing Anthony Bass's job?
No, he's not taking Bass's job. I think truly the jobs that are on the
chopping. So you don't think
block?
Bass's job is on the block?
No, I don't.
Whose job is on the block then? Is it still Trevor Richards?
I think it's between Richards, Simber. So listen, Trevor Richards doesn't have options. I Yeah, I don't know. And I could be wrong on that. And I mean, his numbers have looked rough this season. He hasn't been that guy that we have seen and gotten used to. And he has options. So Simber doesn't have enough playing time to block the move down to AAA, and they wouldn't need to lose an asset and expose him to the waiver wire. Zach Pop is also the other guy I think is on the bubble. And I think that has more to do with the fact, again, he has an option than it is his performance, because he has been very good outside of the Zach Pop implosion that we saw last week. Listen, if you look at just strikeout rate by relievers, Trevor Richards currently has the highest strikeout rate in this bullpen. He's striking out 34% of the hitters he's facing. Zach Pop is second with 32%. Jordan Romano has 28%. Eric Swanson is at 26%. And so is Jimmy Garcia. MLB average, by the way, is a 24.8% strikeout rate. So all five of these guys are above Major League Baseball average. It's what you like to see in the bullpen. And Nate Pearson hopefully is going to continue to take that 45% strikeout rate in AAA and translate it to the big leagues. That's tough to do. I don't know who the odd man out is, man. The Jays are kind of in a precarious spot with the bullpen because they don't have a lot of flexibility and options with who they can move around.
Well, I mean, they can play the IL injury Ferris wheel.
Yes,
I guess is a thing
which can come naturally or be somewhat manipulated depending on where this bullpen's at.
Right now, I think Anthony Bass is fully on my hot seat, my friend. He's $3 million this year, nothing else. So to DFA him, not like a pricey move. Cut ties with Anthony Bass. I mean, he was good last year, but
not he was great this last year. No, he has struggled. He has struggled out of the gate.
ERA 7.36, a whip over 2.
And that's the one that's a real black mark is his whip.
He's been just getting hit around. So I don't know what the advanced like metrics are on what he's doing, but he is getting beat up on. And yeah, with him only, he's 35.
Yes.
So what's the longevity with Anthony Bass?
Honestly, I really do think, dude, we would need to see Anthony Bass continue to be terrible for at least another month before this is a serious conversation. I could be wrong. This team is in win now mode, and you would hope that when you're after a championship, that cuts through all the bullshit and it doesn't really matter. But
like, this is a good problem to have, a best case scenario, but like, If Nate Pearson, or whatever, take Nate Pearson's name out my mouth, right? Whoever it is, Zulueta or any guy, right? If they do come up.
You just Will Smithed yourself there, right?
I know, I did. Yeah, the old reverse Will Smith. Whatever the guy is that gets the call up from AAA to cover an IL stint. If they're dealing and Anthony Bass is putting two people on base an inning, like what are we doing here? Like, get this kid out of my bullpen, man.
If Anthony Bass is put on waiver, he's grabbed immediately, correct?
Sure. Well, yeah, like there's always someone to take a chance on someone, but mm-hmm. What did we give up for Anthony Bass last year?
Jordan Groshans. Friend of the show.
One of our probably a top five prospect in the organization when we traded him.
Yeah, I would say so.
Look, Anthony Bass was great last year. He pitched like a ERA around 1, I think, like 1.5. It was great. But bullpen arms are volatile from one year to the next, right?
from one month to the next also.
Rafael Dolis was good for us in 2020 and then was abysmal the following season. Like, I don't know. That's, it's 35 though. Like, we're not giving up on a guy who's 28 and could still have a career that's haunting us for years to come down the road. Anthony Bass is like squarely my number one hot seat right now. I guess what I'm saying is I want to see more of him as fast as I can so we can get rid of him or feel good about him.
He finds it. Yeah.
Like, it's a pooper get off the pot spot for Anthony Bass. I don't know. I guess I should just look at the game logs for Anthony Bass. Is it all on the back of like one blow up?
I honestly have not looked into Bass's numbers.
Seven innings pitched
closely.
Okay. So there's eight outings. Looks like one earned run, 0-0-2, 0-1-1-1.
So he is spreading it out. Which is almost worse. You would way rather see a guy just get, you know, it's like Gausman, right? You look at his 3 ERA and you're like, ooh, I thought he pitched better than a 3 ERA. And then you look closer and you're like, oh yeah, that one inning he allowed 7 runs, that really affected his numbers.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, I mean, April 6th, he had one inning, 2 strikeouts. That was his best one to date. Otherwise, April 11th came in for 1 shutout inning, no hits, no walks, no strikeouts, got the job done. Otherwise, yeah, I would say it's 6 ugly innings, 2 good innings. So that's not what you want to see for Anthony Bass. Anyways, we've probably spent enough time on Anthony Bass, have we?
I would say so, but I mean, it is a good point that maybe a guy like Bass is a little more on the bubble than people are giving it credit for. I think he's pretty safe, but we'll need to see how it plays out. And this is all dependent on if Nate Pearson performs. We have yet to see an inning pitched in the big leagues from him in 2023. So maybe we should be slow in our roll.
That's fair. Again, I just want to say whether it's Nate or someone else, could be anybody. I think Bass is on the hot seat. Mitch White's coming back soon.
That's true.
All right. From Twitter, at B Welch 1943 reached out to discuss our AL East conversation. Says, your show is terrific. I watch regularly. I've heard in the past you admit being wrong. I just don't want you to forget about Baltimore. Boston should fade out, but not the Orioles. Scott, explain to me why everyone has such a massive, raging fanaticism for the Baltimore Orioles.
Yeah, there are definitely a lot of Blue Jays fans and fans around the league that are looking at the Orioles and really like what they see. And there is a lot of reasons to be positive about the Baltimore Orioles. And when any team rebuilds to the extent the Orioles did and start to come out the other end, it's a very positive feeling around the league, right? Like, you're coming out of the dark ages and you're seeing light again for the first time, and there's hope. To start the season, I was very adamant. I'm a believer in the Baltimore Orioles, and I still hold and maintain that opinion. But what I did say is I am not a believer in them in 2023. I think the Orioles are going to take the next big step in 2024. I think that's when they're actually going to be a contender for a playoff spot and actually be a real thorn in the side of everyone else in the AL East. There are reasons I don't believe in them in 2023. Yes, Adley Rutschman is a stud. Yes, Gunnar Henderson is a stud. The Baltimore Orioles are the third youngest team in Major League Baseball, and they are very, very exciting to watch. Their veterans like Cedric Mullins has just been an exemplary leadership, an exemplary leader on that team. Have taken these young kids, really put them under their wings, and really have succeeded as a team. Okay, now to the negative part. Listen, this Baltimore Orioles starting pitching is garbage. I do not believe in their starting rotation. My apologies if it seems like I am harping on it here, but let's go through who they are putting on the bump every 5 days. Cole Irvin has been on the bump 12.1 innings this year. He has pitched to a 10.66 ERA. Dean Kramer has pitched 24.2 innings to a 6.2 ERA. Grayson Rodriguez has pitched 19 innings to a 5.22 ERA. Kyle Gibson has been their workhorse. Kyle Gibson. Let me just say that again. Kyle Gibson has been their number one guy for taking the ball every five innings and giving them innings. He's pitched 30 innings this year to a 3.6 ERA. And I think that that is excellent for the Orioles. And I do think that Gibson is having a little bit of a rejuvenating season here, right? He has looked really good in comparison to the last couple seasons. I do believe that Kyle Gibson can be the workhorse. I still think that ERA is going to be above four by the end of the year. You need those guys. You need those guys that are going to give you a 4.01 ERA and pitch 190 innings. But if Kyle Gibson is the ace, that is tough on this Orioles team. Now, listen, Tyler Wells has been their top pitcher. He is young. He yo-yoed up and down between the bullpen and the starting rotation last year. Yes, he has taken the ball 23 innings this year to a 2.7 ERA. Fantastic. But these are also Cy Young award-winning numbers, and I don't believe that Tyler Wells is going to, by the end of 162 games, be competing for a Cy Young award. We have watched what a team without starting pitching winds up being. We, the Blue Jays, have been in that spot where the rotation's just not deep enough. These are the teams that Baltimore has played. Okay. Boston 4 times, Oakland 4 times, the White Sox 3 times, the Washington Nationals 3 times. The only teams above 500 this Baltimore Orioles team has faced so far this year are the Texas Rangers and the New York Yankees. And if you want to include Boston in there, who are sitting at 12-12, go ahead.
By the way, Red Sox against teams that are over 500 are 6-11, which means they're 6-1 against teams 500 or worse. So is their 12-12 record a little bit inflated? I would say so.
And lastly, as much as I am an Adley Rutschman fan, or a Gunnar Henderson fan, I'm going to knock on all the wood when I say this. If you take a look at the Blue Jays, if Alejandro Kirk winds up getting injured, again, loud and clear here, this Toronto Blue Jays team, yes, losing their starting catcher, that's a hit. But I truly believe that the Blue Jays have the depth that they could survive 2 months without Kirk. It wouldn't be great. It would suck, obviously. But if you look on the other hand and the Orioles lose Adley Rutschman for 2 months, personally, and I will eat my words if this goes the other way, we can bring it up and everyone can celebrate me being wrong.
I'm so uncomfortable with this conversation.
But if Adley Rutschman's out for 2 months, I think the Baltimore Orioles fold up and call it a season.
So is Adley Rutschman your front runner for MVP 22 games into the season?
I mean, as insane as it sounds, he's a top three guy so far in the first 3 weeks of the season. He's been incredible. He has put that Baltimore Orioles on his back. Pull up Rutschman's numbers here, and let's just take a look at what he's doing, because he has been literally at the forefront of this Orioles offense all season long.
Looks like 4 home runs, .289 batting average, OPS of .874.
hitting in the two hole.
I mean, those are really good. I wouldn't say MVP caliber numbers, but yeah, I mean, what he's doing behind the plate too. I mean, to have it, have those numbers coming from your catching position.
Rushman's
I'm not trying to poo-poo on Rushman.
No, that's the thing. That's the thing is Rushman's numbers even a week ago looked far better than that. And this is what you're going to have with a young guy. There's going to be peaks and valleys. This is baseball. There's streakiness involved, right? Like, I know I just, for 5 minutes, it probably sounded like I was shitting on the Orioles. I'm not. I really do believe this team next year is going to be a pain. I think that the front office is going to spend more money next offseason. I think they're going to bring in some actual starting pitching to be at the front of this rotation. And I think another year forward for Rushman and Henderson and this young Baltimore Orioles team is going to put them in playoff contention. This 15-7 record, we're looking at the Orioles as they sit second in the AL East. I just don't buy this is going to stick. And I'll eat my words. And great comment from B. Welsh on Twitter. If you want to believe in the Orioles, go right for it. I'm not there yet.
Is there a chance? The Baltimore Orioles just don't. What's the right word I'm looking for here? I expected the Orioles to regress because they're a young underachieving team a young team that overachieved last year. They'll do for regression. Maybe they just don't. Like, maybe they're just too young to even recognize the fact that they should regress. You know, sometimes that just happens where there's like, it can go either way, where like a young guy gets called up and isn't ready for the big leagues. But then you have another guy, young guy that's called up and is like too young to even appreciate the pressure, like Roberto Osuna.
Yeah.
It's just like closing games for the Blue Jays at like 11 years old. It's just like, you know, just like didn't like the pressure just doesn't get to some people. They just like, for whatever reason, like,
yeah.
I don't know. You know,
to that point, baseball is probably the most difficult sport to do that in.
Sure.
Because 162 games tends to catch up to everybody.
Certainly does. I think the
but let's talk about this in August. We'll bring it up. Yeah. Listen, if Baltimore is right there still, I will gladly eat my words. Predictions are predictions. This is why I don't believe in the Orioles, and that I'd love to hear everyone's comments too. Feel free to drop those below and let me know how you think the Baltimore Orioles are going to fare for the rest of the season. I think they are going to be a pain in the butt, and I think we are going to be talking about them until June, but I think they are going to be this year's Boston Red Sox, where, yeah, if you remember last year, the Red Sox were right there and then just dropped off. The season caught up to them. But I think that's enough Baltimore talk.
Certainly putting me to sleep. All right. Next one comes in. Lindsay the Real on Twitter says, "Hey guys, I always forget how much 10 days can change things in a baseball season. 10 days ago, I was panicking about our starting pitching. Things look pretty good right now. Are you guys still worried at all about the rotation, Scott?"
So this DM made me laugh, Adam, because Lindsay had reached out to me about 2 weeks ago and she was like in a full on panic. She was just like, "I thought the starting rotation was going to be what saved this team. I thought that they were going to be the best rotation in baseball." And it is funny how 10 games can completely change your opinion or your view, you know, month to month.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this rotation has looked really good. In fact, the most consecutive quality start since 2018 was June 3rd to 10th, 2018. They had 7 quality starts. From April 18th till now, they are at 6 quality starts. So they are one behind the best run of consistent starts in 5 years. So yeah, the starting rotation looks good. Chris Bassett in 13 innings pitch has allowed 2 earned runs. In 12 innings pitched, Jose Berríos has allowed 3 runs. In 12 innings pitched, Yusei Kikuchi has allowed 2 earned runs. In 7 innings pitched for both Manoah and Gausman, they have allowed 0 earned runs. And the biggest thing for me in these last 10 games was Saturday and watching Alek Manoah take the ball, go 7 innings against New York and look like he did last season. And we needed to see that out of Manoah, because if this is going to be an actual World Series contending team, Adam, we are going to need the big man, and we're going to need him looking like he did last year.
Yeah, going to need Alek Manoah for sure. You touched on Chris Bassett. I just want to bring up Chris Bassett for a second. He has pitched really good, obviously had the blow-up game to start the season. This is, I think, kind of like the textbook on who he is. Like, he's going to, at the end of the season, give you an ERA around 3.5 to 4. But it's going to come in the form of 3 good outings mm-hmm. and then a stinker. 3 or 4 good outings and then a stinker. I'm looking at his game logs from last year and just scrolling down the innings pitched and earned runs. It's like 0 earned runs, 1 earned run, 5 earned run, 0, 1, 1, 8, 1, 3, 0, 7. This is like who he is. Like, he's just, yes, when he's on, he's going to give you 6 or 7 innings and you're going to be like, this is great. And you're going to feel like you're in that game. And then there's going to be a stinker where he's giving you 8 earned runs in 3 innings. So
hitters,
he's
are just going picking to be, up what he's throwing. And yeah,
he's going to be due for a stinker sometime in the next week or two. And just don't panic. This is what he is. Yes. This is, yes, this is what he is. So,
yeah, fair warning.
I'm high on Chris Bassett. Obviously, what's not to love about Kevin Gausman? Mm-hmm. Jose Berríos? Jury's still out for me on Jose Berríos.
Of course.
2 good ones, 2 bad ones. He's taken the ball today. Nothing he can do today is going to really change my feeling about him for the season.
I will be honest, if he gets blown up by the White Sox, that does definitely increase my panic level a little bit. But a good start, as funny as it sounds, does very little for me. So it's like, you know, you can go both ways, mm-hmm. where a bad start does worry me. A good start doesn't move the needle much. Probably unfair to the guy.
It is a little unfair. I mean, I'm just looking at the Blue Jays schedule. It's like, if he gets blown up by the White Sox, on the one hand, like you said, it's like he got blown up by the White Sox. What the hell? Mm-hmm. But also, he did go 5 innings with 1 earned run against the Rays like 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
So that, like, that's just where Jose Berríos for me is just like, I have no idea what to ever expect. He can pitch terribly against bad teams. He can pitch lights out against like the Rays, really one of the best teams in, yes, baseball. Like,
yes,
the Rays aren't just doing it on the back of like elite pitching like they usually do. Like,
no, I know.
Their
offense has been insane.
The number one offense in baseball as far as runs scored goes, like 157 runs. The only other, mm-hmm. team that's close is the Texas Rangers at 145. And then I think third place is the Dodgers at 120. So Jose Berríos, yeah, I don't know, man. Like, a good game, a bad game. Nothing really moves the needle for me on Jose Berríos. Yusei Kikuchi, on the other hand, if he gives us a good outing this week.
Are you a full-on believer?
It'd be hard not to be. Now, one thing with Yusei Kikuchi, and we've touched on this before, is that even last year, he looked good until the end of May.
Mm-hmm.
And then the wheels fell off. Like, by the end of May, he was pitching at a like 3.5 ERA, 3.6 in that range. So for me, Yusei Kikuchi, April and May, I'm not really ready to make up my mind and say he's good fair. Again. Right? Yeah, like, if he's pitching well into the summer, I'm going to be a believer. Until then, okay. This is just like, I'm going to enjoy it. Every good start we get out of him. Alek Manoah, on the other hand. You feel good after the Yankees outing? Is he all the way back?
I'm not all the way back. I'd like to see another good outing out of him, but it was definitely very, very, it was a positive outing. And I think that he needed it. And that was one thing that was kind of worrisome, was like, you could just tell how much the big man needed a good start. And the fact that he managed to put it together in New York against a very, very good Yankees team should just bode well for this Blue Jays starting staff, because Manoah with confidence and at his best, does that ever make this rotation deep?
Yeah. Yeah. If Manoah is performing like a number one or a number two for us, feel a lot better.
All is well in the world. Sure. Exactly. Thank you, Lindsay. Appreciate you reaching out.
Yeah, thank you. All right. Next one's kind of a fun one. Made me laugh from our Discord. Super serious question. Who is ordering Bradley Zimmer's cameo? Also, his cameo handle is Zim Shady.
This is a great example of our Discord, by the way. It's mostly just a bunch of Blue Jays fans goofing around and making jokes and picking up little things off of players' social media and then poking fun.
When I was a young lad, I was pretty good at baseball. My aspirations of playing in the big leagues, my best case scenario, my dreams, if you will, Scott.
Yes.
I don't think I ever saw myself being as good at baseball as Bradley Zimmer is. So, like, as fun as it is to poop on him, you've got to be really good to be that bad at baseball.
It's very true. Bradley Zimmer is an exceptional athlete. I know that when I was in Las Vegas last week, I went and checked out the AAA Las Vegas Aviators versus the Oklahoma City Dodgers. And Bradley Zimmer is playing on that AAA Dodgers team. Of course, that is next step up is Los Angeles. And there's not a better team that you could be a fourth outfielder on. Bradley Zimmer continuing to get looks. He's an incredible outfielder. I mean, he did go 0-for-3 at the plate, so he's still consistent there. But yeah.
All right. I think 1 minute and 45 seconds is enough time spent on Bradley Zimmer. Speaking of your time at that game, on YouTube, Lauren commented and said, "Where'd you get the Bison's hat, Scott?"
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah. I even saw that and didn't wind up responding, but this is so much easier. Lauren, by the way, I think Lauren is a Cowtown listener. I think he's a Calgary boy,
oh, nice.
But, yeah, I got that in Las Vegas at a Lids there. They had all of the AAA affiliates out, which was pretty cool, 'cause you don't often see a Bison's hat. I know I'd never seen it. And so when I saw it, I was like, I love this. I have to have this, and I'm going to spend more money than I should on a hat. So let's go.
Love it. All right, Scott, here is a Vladdy question. From Darth Yen, says, "Why is Vladdy always DHing this year? Is he hurt or dealing with some minor injury? Or is this just more poor decisions from John Schneider? This is the 7th time DHing this month in only 27 games. Jays have won nothing yet. And if this is about saving Vlad for September, then that's just BS. The man is 24 years old and never injured. He's a Gold Glove winner. And you can't win Gold Gloves from the bench. Brandon Belt was brought in to DH, not be a platoon at first base. Belt can't perform as a DH, then he needs to be moved out, not moved to first base." So we did
a lot to unpack here. Yes, a lot to unpack here. I was just going to say that when you and I saw this comment, both of us were like, this, it didn't compute, like, because it never really stood out to us that Vladdy was DHing more than normal. So you, of course,
so we looked into it. As a point of clarification, I'm using baseballreference.com to pull these numbers out. His fielding game logs for 2023 indicate he's played DH six times so far this season, so last not
night,
seven.
Last night was his sixth time DH.
Yes, last night was his sixth time through 23 games. It's kind of just right on pace with where he's been, though. Like, if we look at his game logs from last year, through April, 22 games, he's DH five times. In 2021, through 24 games, he was DH five times. Like, he's just, he gets DH opportunities. This is not anything new. This is kind of just who he is. If we're looking at his games,
I don't think it has
his career even. Scott, 2019, 24 games at DH. 2020 was a weird year. But 2021, he had 28 games at DH. Last year, he had 32 games at DH. This year, yeah, he's on pace for 30-ish games as a DH.
So Darth Yen, appreciate the comment, and it may feel like he is being DH'd more than normal, but if you look at the last few years, he's right on par with where he has been the last few years. Brandon Belt struggling maybe does make it seem like they're sticking Belt there a little more to try and get his back going. It just doesn't look like that's the actual case when you break down the numbers.
So, yeah, I would say Vladdy can, in fact, win a Gold Glove playing first base 128 times, because that's what he did last year. 128 games at first base. Won a Gold Glove the year before, 133 games at DH, or sorry, at first base. So, yeah, that's what we're going to get out of Vladdy, is some load management, if you will. But it is, yeah, I think you're right, Scott. Maybe it stands out seeing Brandon Belt there, but I'd probably rather see Brandon Belt play first base than Kevin Biggio.
Yeah, I'm in kind of the same boat. I still have more faith in Belt's bat too. So nothing against Biggio, who hit a big home run last night.
Yeah, big time. Okay, last one to end on, and then we're out of here. So Butter Tart had commented, check the pitch tempo stats on Baseball Savant. This is obviously in reference to our collective concerns about Alek Manoah that we've had, and our curiosity about the impact of the pitch clock on Alek Manoah. And is that to blame? Is that to blame? So, thank you for doing the homework for us.
Yes.
Butter Tart, first and foremost. It's funny how hard it is to look up something when you don't know the term to Google in the first place.
Yeah. Right? Oh, I know. I had so many people reach out to me pretty much saying I'm an idiot, because I had spent like 20 minutes trying to find the stat for that. But again, if you don't really know the name of the stat or what you're looking for, it's trickier than when you're what is the time between pitches on
how many times has that ever come up before this year, right? Where you would have ever been curious about.
Yeah. Cause who cares?
Okay. So pitch tempo, to break this down, is pitch tempo measures. This is according to Baseball Savant, their definition for this metric is pitch tempo measures the median time between pitches. In other words, time from pitch release to pitch release, so ball leaving hand. And it only takes into account called balls and called strikes, and that are thrown to the same batter. So if a ball is fouled off, that does not take into account for the pitch tempo. If it is a batter has walked or struck out and it's a new batter, that time is not taken into account. Obviously, any ball in play not taken into account. So just over the course of a season, all of the pitches that are called balls and strikes. So they have also added for context that any pitch thrown within 15 seconds is to be considered a fast pitch, and anything longer than 30 is considered to be a slow pitch. So why does this matter? Alek Manoah, quite slow. according to this pitch tempo metric.
Of course, the new rules that have come into place for 2023 states that any pitcher has 15 seconds when there's nobody on base to engage with the rubber on the mound and then get that ball to home plate. 20 seconds when there's someone on. So what is Alek Manoah sitting at for last year?
So I just want to, I do just want to clarify that that pitch timer is not a like one-to-one measurement versus the pitch tempo that we're looking at.
It's the best we can measure find.
Differently, but it is the best we can find. And what is helpful is as we look at Alek Manoah's numbers is knowing that the league average last season for pitch tempo was 18.1 seconds. So keep that in mind as we look at this. Jose Berríos was the fastest Toronto Blue Jay as far as pitch tempo goes. 15.4.
So even Jose Berríos, who was the fastest guy in the starting rotation for the Blue Jays, was still 0.4 seconds over the rule. So even he had to adjust, even though he already kept a pretty good tempo.
Alek Manoah, so sorted by starting pitchers, so it doesn't take relief pitchers into account. But as far as starting pitchers last season goes, we have 205 qualified starting pitchers for the pitch tempo category. 205. Alek Manoah was 189th on that list.
That's substantial.
Pretty close to the bottom. What did we say league average was? 18.1 seconds. Alek Manoah's pitch tempo, 20.7. Scott.
So this is where you do need to take into account last year's numbers when you're looking at Alek Manoah this year and maybe give him a little bit of leeway with this start. Because shaving 5 seconds off your delivery, every delivery, is a lot. It's a lot. It's a substantial amount of time. He is literally needing to make these pitches 25% faster than he did last year. And if you take that into account, yeah, you probably like... maybe not conditioning wise, but just with the rhythm of your heart and all of that and how much work it takes, it's going to take a little getting used to because it's just more work.
So two things that I want to bring up here. First, as far as tempo goes, what's the big deal, right? Think of the home run derby, right? I know that's an exaggerated example, but this is a fast tempo. We're swinging like as fast as we can, right? Like as soon as that ball lands and they're allowed to throw the next pitch, it's coming, right? It's 5 minutes of like swinging as hard, like max effort swings, right? It's like tempo is a factor when you're doing sustained effort at a quick clip. Now, for anybody who's saying, well, how is Alek Manoah so bothered by this, but the hilariously slow Chris Bassett is doing just fine? Well, guess what Chris Bassett's pitch tempo was last year? Again, Manoah's was 20.7. So guess what Chris Bassett?
I don't know.
Chris Bassett's pitch tempo, 17.9. Almost 3 full seconds faster than Alek Manoah.
Yeah.
On average. It's Alek Manoah. There you go. I just mean like by the best metric that we can find, one of the
slowest,
more lackadaisical pitchers took his time, took a breather, and does not have time for that. So yeah, I think that's any Sportsnet producer tuning in. Relay this to Blair and Barker and let's have them weigh in on this. All right. Cause I'd love to hear it.
All right. Well, great job doing the research there, sir. That was awesome.
Yeah. Thanks to Butter Tart for bringing that up.
And Butter Tart for finding the stat.
That That's all I got today. Mailbag in the books, in the sack, in the mail sack.
At Walk Off Podcast on Twitter for you to reach out for next week. The Walk Off Podcast on Instagram. Shoot us a DM if you want that Discord link. A big tip of the hat to our Patreon members. We truly do appreciate you. Big Patreon unveiling coming up next week.
Rollout. A big rollout.
Rollout, sure. If you will. And we'll see you all. We actually have Mitch Bannon of Sports Illustrated, the main reporter for the Blue Jays at Sports Illustrated, joining us Friday morning. So we will see you then.
That'll be a good one. Okay. Good luck in Chicago. Cheers. To the Blue Jays. Cheers, Scott. Bye, Dad.
Before we go, I will tease, I am in the Okanagan this weekend, Wednesday. I am in Penticton, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, shows around Kelowna. Would love to see you out. It's going to be a good one. And my openers are probably better than I am. Both Dale Ward and Mike Lynch are absolutely hilarious.
Nice. So I love Dale.
It's going to be a front to back really good show. Again, you can get tickets for that in the notes here in YouTube or in the show notes if you're listening in the audio. Thanks so much, gang. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! With a drive. Cheese and crackers. Shows to picture. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.